Can the so-called status quo of Jerusalem's Old City be preserved? A long-standing agreement bans Jews from praying at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. But ultranationalist groups want that to change, and they're getting more political support. Why is the issue so contentious? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Kim Vanell. Tens of thousands of ultra-nationalist Israelis have marched through occupied East Jerusalem in what's being seen as the latest provocation against Palestinians. Every year, far-right Jewish groups mark the illegal occupation of East Jerusalem by holding what they call a Flag Day march. Some took part in an incursion in the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound and raised the Israeli flag. And some Jewish worshippers also prayed, violating a long-standing agreement preventing non-Muslims from holding religious rituals there. The Palestinian Prime Minister denounced what he called aggression. Such incursions have become increasingly common. Imran Khan reports from occupied East Jerusalem.
Flags wave in what Israel says is a celebration and Palestinians call a provocation. The Israeli flag march, part of what's known by Israelis as Jerusalem Day, is a holiday when Israeli forces captured East Jerusalem in 1967 during the Six-Day War. For Israel, it's victory. For the Palestinians, it's occupation. In recent years, though, ultra-nationalist Israeli groups have used the flag march to push their own agenda. A minority, openly racist far-right group like Lahava used the march to call for the expulsion of all Palestinians from what was once historical Palestine and for the dismantling of the third holiest site in Islam, the Dome of the Rock in the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. This year, Public Security Minister Omar Bar-Lev has allowed the march to travel through Damascus Gate, the heart of occupied East Jerusalem. Hamas, which rules the Gaza Strip, is monitoring the situation.
I think we as Hamas, we are not hesitate to use any means in order to stop and to deter the extremists from doing these big mistakes against our people and our Palestinians in the Al-Aqsa Mosque or in Jerusalem. We think that Israel is doing now a big catastrophe in this region.
Last year, the march combined with the forced expulsions of Palestinians in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood sparked at the 11-day war on Gaza when Hamas threatened Israel with rockets. Mitchell Barak, an independent Israeli political consultant, says allowing the march to enter Palestinian areas is once again dangerous.
For Israelis to fly the flag anywhere in Israel, in Jerusalem or East Jerusalem, it makes a statement. Israeli sovereignty is demonstrated there by the Israeli army, the Israeli police that is there and is deciding who can march, where can they march, what flag can be flown by which people. And that's going to be a boiling point.
In areas outside of the Old City, Palestinians clashed with Israeli police. Clashes also took place across the occupied West Bank, where the Israeli army used live fire and tear gas against unarmed Palestinians.
Well, it seems that the marchers have actually dictated to the Israeli police how they're going to come in to Damascus Gate. They've opened up another route. This was never supposed to happen. There are only a few Israeli police here, despite a huge operation, security operation, across the city, and the Israeli police are simply overwhelmed.
The marchers openly chanting hate slogans and proclaiming that this is a Jewish-only land. This young generation that are out in force believe that completely. And these people are the ones that are backing the Israeli government and keeping it in power. And as long as that's the case, they have a very loud voice at the heart of the Israeli government. Imran Khan, Al Jazeera, occupied East Jerusalem.
The Al-Aqsa compound is one of the most volatile flashpoints in occupied East Jerusalem. For Muslims, it contains two of Islam's holy sites, the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Dome of the Rock. Jews call it Temple Mount, revering it as their first temple. They pray at the Western Wall. In 1967, Jordan and Israel agreed that the Waqif, or Islamic Trust, controls the compound, while Israel controls external security. Only Muslims are allowed to pray in the mosque, while Jews can pray outside the compound at the Western Wall. The Waqif allows non-Muslims to visit the compound 5 days a week under its supervision. Tourists are allowed in. But Palestinians are concerned the site's Muslim identity is under threat by ultra-right-wing religious groups increasingly entering and attempting to pray there illegally. Let's bring in our guests. In Ramallah, in the occupied West Bank, Mustafa Barghouti is a Palestinian physician, activist and politician. He is Secretary General of the Palestinian National Initiative and a former information minister in the Palestinian government. In Tel Aviv, in Israel, Akiva Elder is an author and contributing writer at Haaretz newspaper. And in Cambridge, in the United States, Rami Khoury is a syndicated columnist and professor of journalism at the American University of Beirut. A very warm welcome to you all. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us here on Inside Story. I'd like to start with you, Mr. Barghouti, if I may. Is the status quo being eroded at Al-Aqsa? And what does that mean for Palestinians?
First, it was eroded and viciously. I mean, first of all, according to the existing agreements, the Israeli army has no right to enter the mosque or control who enters it or who leaves it. Actually, they have taken away that responsibility from the Waqf, and they are bringing in their troops inside the mosque, attacking Palestinians as they did frequently in Ramadan. But more than that, they allowed what is not allowable, which is certain Israeli Jewish people who entered the mosque did prayers in the mosque, which is a serious violation. They also rose Israeli flags, which is also not allowed. And they did that for several minutes under the supervision and observation of the Israeli army, who allowed them to do so. That's besides, of course, the attacks on Palestinians' peaceful worshippers. This has become a common practice. At one point in Ramadan, we had more than 200 people injured severely. One of them actually died because of the attacks of the Israeli army on worshippers. So this is a very serious erosion of existing agreements, and it is an attack on the status quo. But most important, it is an attack on the rights of the Palestinian people and on freedom of religion.
Mr. Akiva Elder, I'd like to cross over to you. As far as Yair Lapid is concerned, he says the status quo remains. Israel is committed to the status quo. But this is obviously a divided Knesset. How much support is there for keeping the status quo, for changing it? Is it a matter of there just not being adequate security to ensure that the agreement is upheld in the compound? Or is there a willful movement to change the status quo there?
Well, I think that there is one place in Jerusalem, maybe in the Middle East, which is more fragile and unstable than Haram Sharif at the Temple Mount. And this is the chair of Prime Minister Bennett. And I think that everything is part of the instability of the government. I think that this is why there is no question that Israel is violating the status quo. Thousands of Jews were allowed to go there to pray. And the fact of the matter is that there is no price tag to this. Not in Middle East currency, diplomatic currency. We don't see any Gulf country calling their ambassador back or the Jordanian flag taken down. Voices from Washington are also quite mild. So for Bennett, when the balance is between the stability of the government and the coalition, the voices that are coming from his own party that are protesting the status quo, challenging the status quo. So, of course, he has to pay lip service that, and especially Lapid, that they respect the status quo because we have interest in the Gulf, we have interest in Jordan, but we don't have interest in Ramallah, and we don't have interest in East Jerusalem, but the status quo. Mm. And here the status quo on the Temple Mount is a kind of an oxymoron with the status quo in the peace negotiations that are going nowhere.
Mr. Ramaphosa, I'd like to cross over to you now. If we accept that there is, as we've heard, is an erosion of the status quo there, what has led to this? Is this a rise in popularity or perhaps visibility of the ultra-nationalist, of the far right? What's the sort of wider context here?
The wider context, I think, is the convergence of several trends that we've seen over probably the last 20 years or so, and it's going faster now with this right-wing vulnerable Israeli government. First of all, the increase in right-wing settler, ethnic purity sentiment in Israel that the Jews, the Israelis, the Zionists have claim to all the land from the river to the sea. The second trend is the total weakness of the Palestinian leadership, lack of any serious leadership in Jerusalem for the Palestinians, because the Israelis have either jailed or expelled or intimidated any serious indigenous leadership. And the third element is the lack of any external accountability. As Akiva said, that the Americans, the Europeans, the Arabs, none of them are really holding Israel accountable for the events. And it's not just the status quo. The status quo is a very limited focus, has a focus on the Haram al-Sharif, the Temple Mount. But that's the most sensitive part of the most sensitive district and the most sensitive city in the center of Palestine, at the heart of the Zionist-Arabist, Zionist-Palestinian conflict going back 100 years. And the Israelis have been steadily trying to strengthen their control over all of Jerusalem by expelling people, jailing people, not renewing residence permits, intimidating people, taking over land, annexing areas, building new settlements. So this has to be seen as part of a much bigger and much older process that goes back about 100 years, but has been accelerated because of the three reasons that I mentioned. And that's why populism is so strong, because it's the only resistance available to the people there.
I'd like to pick up on one of your points, the weakness of Palestinian leadership, and put that to you, Mr. Mustafa Barghouti. Is Palestinian resistance to these changes, is it weakening?
On the contrary, it is getting stronger. The Palestinian Authority is weak, but the Palestinian people are not weak. And I think what we've seen in Jerusalem is a heroic act of resistance, popular nonviolent resistance, standing up to the power of the Israeli army and the provocations of the Israeli illegal settlers. And I think what we saw are Palestinians who are determined to demand their freedom and protect their rights. But what we've seen also is very serious provocation from the Israeli side. What we've seen is very serious violation, not only of international law, because the whole march is about celebrating an illegal act of annexing an occupied territory. According to international law, this is unlawful. And also what we have seen is very serious violation of human rights of Palestinian people. You can see how the army is behaving. What we also saw is a reflection of how deep and profound the system of Israeli apartheid in Palestine is. When you allow Israelis to carry thousands of flags and prevent Palestinians from carrying even a single Palestinian flag, that is a reflection of discrimination, a reflection of segregation, a reflection of a terrible system of apartheid that is much worse than what prevailed in South Africa. But more than that, let me say what we've seen in this march, the aggressive behavior of armed illegal settlers against unarmed Palestinian civilians was nothing but fascist behavior. I call it fascist behavior because it was extreme, it was dangerous, the people's lives were at risk, and the Palestinians had nothing to defend themselves, while these armed settlers were attacking them, while the Israeli army not only observed, but also arrested any Palestinian who tried to defend himself.
Akiva Elder, I want to talk to you a little bit about the Flag Day march. Also during the march, we heard calls from some of these far-right groups for the expulsion of all Palestinians and for the first time publicly calling for the dismantling of the Dome of the Rock. I mean, are these views, these once very fringe views, now coming more into the mainstream?
Actually, it's not the first time. in the 80s, Jewish underground, members of the Jewish underground were arrested before they exercised their plan to bomb the mosques. I'm afraid that it's not a matter of a will, it's a matter of ability to do this. There are people who are being interviewed about it and they talk about it openly, that it's time to get rid of the mosque and the Palestinian, the Haram al-Sharif, and to build a third Israeli mosque. You could see yesterday children with T-shirts on the back of them. It's time to build the third mosque. Now, the other thing is that we give this government, which is completely aware of it, the benefits of being the alternative to Benjamin Netanyahu. If Netanyahu was prime minister, the Israeli left and the international community would be all over him. But since we are so happy that we have Lapid as foreign minister and not Itamar Ben-Gvir, because what we hear from the government is, what do you want? You want us to bring down this government headed by Bennett and Lapid and to get Ben-Gvir as being the minister of police. So the Israeli public is intimidated both from the Hamas, who is warning to shoot rockets on Israel, on Tel Aviv, on Jerusalem, what happened 2 years ago, and intimidated by Netanyahu, who is provoking this government by sending those people and inciting the people against this government. So, and on the other hand, I see the weakness of the Palestinian Authority, because they are also kind of subcontractors of this government. And I remember I interviewed Professor Sarah Nusseibeh few years ago, and he said, it's time to run for mayorship. And he said that he's considering. Now, you know, it's 55 years of the occupation of Jerusalem, and what we see from the Central Bureau of Statistics in Israel, that the Palestinians are now about 40% of the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and they have the right to write, and they can form a coalition with the Israeli Jewish left, and maybe even with the ultra-Orthodox, and they can build mosques whenever, wherever they want, and stop building settlements in East Jerusalem. But they don't do this for some reason, you know.
I can just see, I want to pause you there, because I can see Mustafa Barghouti would like to add something. Go ahead, Mr. Barghouti.
Well, first of all, I want to say there is no real difference between Netanyahu and Naftali Bennett, or the government of Netanyahu and the government of Naftali Bennett. Naftali Bennett himself was a leader of settlers. He was the director of the Regional Council of the Settlements. He himself is an extreme right-winger like Netanyahu. He was even the chief of staff for Netanyahu. So, and I think the rest of the Israeli government, I think it's shameful that some parties like Meretz, who claim to be on the left, is supporting this government. And the same applies to Mansour Abbas, by the way, who's a Palestinian. I think these people have to bring down this government after this fascist behavior. But more important, I totally disagree with Mr. Akiba on the issue of municipality elections. No. If you don't want two-state solution, let's have one democratic state with equal rights for everybody. Not municipality elections in Jerusalem under occupation, under a system of segregation and apartheid, and a law that says that self-determination in the land of Palestine is exclusive to Jewish people. No, you don't want two-state solution? Fine. Let's have one state solution, one democratic state solution, and not one apartheid state, in which case we can run for a joint parliament and that country will not be Jewish only. This is the reality if you want to speak about democracy and not only be exclusive to elections in Jerusalem. This would be a big mistake, because that would mean that we Palestinians are accepting not only occupation, but also the rules of the system of apartheid.
Rami Khoury, I'd like to come back to you and just pick up on something you spoke about earlier about sort of what repercussions there are for Israel failing to uphold the agreed status quo around the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Is sort of wider Arab resistance weakening? Those that once purported to be strong defenders of the Palestinian cause, perhaps not so committed anymore?
There's clearly a change among some Arab leaderships in countries that are afraid of their governments and rulers' continued ability to stay in power, and therefore cling to external support, mainly from the United States and now increasingly from Israel. These are countries that are essentially being de-sovereignized. They're losing their sovereignty. They can't make decisions about defense equipment they want to buy, where they get their water, where they get their food, without getting the approval of either the Israeli or the American government and the funds to do so. And therefore, there clearly is a decline in Palestinian supporting the Palestinian cause by a few governments. But the overwhelming majority of Arab people, which is repeatedly affirmed in public opinion polling, supports the Palestinian people and supports a fair two-state resolution or a single state so that the Jewish Israelis who are in Palestine and in Israel can stay there, but they can't stay there as occupiers in an apartheid state. And the Palestinians must have their state and their refugeehood must be resolved. So this is a bigger issue. The really the significant thing that's happening broadly, if we zoom out from just from the Aqsa and the Haram Sharif Temple Mount, the biggest thing that's happening now, and it's been going on since last May, June, is the reframing of the Israel-Palestine conflict in terms of both apartheid and ethnic cleansing and a century-long conflict between settler colonialists coming from abroad and indigenous Palestinians who were 94% of the majority 100 years ago in this area. The irony and the thing that's important for Israelis is that Arab Palestinians between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean in mandated Palestine now make up just over 50% of the population. There are more Arab Palestinians than there are Jewish Israelis in this land. And this trend is going to continue. And this is what's driving some of the extremism. And one last point I'd add, increasingly significant is the trend we see here in the United States, where just the other day, 60 congressmen and women put out a statement wrote a letter to the government in the U.S. to stop, take a position on the ethnic cleansing that the Israelis are doing in Masaf Yetta, which is the villages south of Hebron. So when you get 60 people in the American Congress publicly challenging the colonial policies of the Israelis, this is significant. It's not a majority, but it's starting to happen, and it's just mirrored all over the United States, where there's a greater demand for equal rights for Israelis and Palestinians, and this scares Zionists.
We're nearing the end of the program, so I'd like to just pass back over to you, Mustafa Barghouti. Do you agree with that analysis about there being a reframing of everything and sort of how that's being communicated, I guess?
I do, absolutely. I do agree, because I think that is the result of the fact that when Palestinians accepted a very painful compromise of having a state in West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem, accepting practically a state in less than half of what UN decided we should have, the Israelis rejected that and made every possible obstacle to the possibility of the establishment of the Palestinian state. And that Israeli rejection, regardless of who was a prime minister in Israel, whether it was Yitzhak Rabin or Netanyahu or Sharon, the whole rejected the compromise. And because of that, I think Palestine, and with the settlement expansion, I think Palestinians are coming now to going back to the very roots of the issue, that this is one place and we are entitled to full equality and we are entitled to remove the effects of the settler colonial system. And the issue of ethnic cleansing have to be addressed, which was practiced in 1948, forcing what is now 6.5 million Palestinian refugees. So I think, yes, I do agree, because I think Palestinians now see and believe that Israel does not want and did not want a historical compromise.
All right, we'll have to leave it there for time. Thank you very much for joining us, Mustafa Barghouti, Akiva Elder, and Rami Khoury. And thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Kim Vanel, and the whole team here, bye-bye for now.